All right, y'all, welcome back to another episode of Technical Knockout, the Hardcore Casual MMA Podcast. I'm your host, Hussein. With me, as always, my co-host, Jordan Patrick James.
What's up?
Today, we're going to recap UFC Almeida versus Lewis and then get into the stacked UFC 295 card coming out of MSG. Let's do it.
The most homoerotic main event in UFC history, I tell you what.
I mean, it's certainly...
Not since Royce Gracie and Kim Shamrock II have I seen such tender lovingness.
I mean, let me tell you, you know, I think it's got a great shot for gayest main event.
Dude,
holy,
I'll tell you what, man, my wife went to bed early and I was like, no, I can't. I'm going to watch this. I got to see this main event, man. And she woke up a little bit, came out halfway through, and unfortunately, it was at a time when Almeida was looking lovingly in Lewis's eyes, and she hasn't looked at me since, man. It's causing problems.
I mean, all right. So first off, very impressive. Let's give Almeida credit for the diverse takedown game, and you know, being able to hold down Derek Lewis for that long, and you know, staying in dominant position, yada 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 yada. You know, he should have finished the fight. He should have been throwing more punches. He should have been, you know, going for Kimuras and arm locks and things like that. Instead, he was intent to sit in them out and stare into Lewis's eyes like a long lost lover. And
it was weird.
You know, it was weird. Yeah, I mean, you got to give. You know, it takes two to make a snooze fest. You know what I mean? Lewis did everything he could on the feet when they got to those positions. He was throwing those uppercuts. He was showing the knee. You know, he was trying. But once they got to the ground, he's very content to not get submitted, not get finished, and just hold on to wrists or just, you know, stay safe. I don't blame the guy. You know what I mean? Almeida's a dangerous motherfucker, especially, you know, when he's on top. Like we said in the preview pod, I don't think we've seen much of anybody be able to get him off of them when he gets on top. I just wish that, you know, Almeida would have done a little bit more there. So here's the thing, right? So we were watching the fight, and it became very apparent in the first round that Almeida cannot wrap his arms around Lewis's head and arm, his head and neck, or his arm and his neck. The dude's just too big. You know what I mean? So he couldn't get the choke. How do you choke that which has no neck? You know what I mean? And then he couldn't get the arm lock or the, you know, the Kimura or Americana or any of those submissions that he loves because Lewis was too strong. So what are you left with? If you can't submit the guy, you could go for the ground and pound TKO, but Lewis has only been knocked out by like the heaviest hitters in the weight class, like we've talked about, so the Pavloviches and the, you know, Tai Tuivasas and things like that. So you're left with staying on top and riding out the position for the rest of the round. And that's exactly what Almeida did for the entirety of the fight. I'm sure that the control time was something ridiculous, like 20 minutes or something like that. I wouldn't be surprised. That's what it felt like. Almeida, to his credit, you know, we talked about in the preview pod that he does the same takedown every time, the front leg or the front kick into the double leg. To his credit, he was throwing up a couple different takedowns this fight. He threw up some single legs. He had that nice half guard escape. I think it was in the third or fourth round. So, you know, he showed that he has a much more diverse wrestling game than we thought he did. But he also showed that he doesn't know how to finish the fight if he can't get a arm triangle or a rear naked choke or a Americana. So, you know, for me, I think what we have to do for if you're Almeida's camp, I would suggest, you know, going to the gym and putting the bag down on the floor and beating the shit out of it, like how you've seen Khabib or like Linton Vassell or any of these guys that have vicious ground and pound do. The AKA guys in particular are really good at that. You know, beat up the bag on the ground, figure out where you can land your shots. And, you know, I think something that he could have been serviced a lot from this fight, and the commentators called it live, was Lewis was grabbing the wrists a lot and giving him a lot of trouble with that, just grabbing his wrists. It's something that we've seen, like, you know, MVP do to Douglas Lima when they fought. And, you know, a classic example would be somebody like, you know, Matt Hughes against Royce Gracie or any of these jiu-jitsu guys. When you grab the wrists, it makes it pretty tough for the jiu-jitsu guy to get out or to, you know, advance position or go for chokes or anything. But what you can do is use that wrist that they're grabbing and just turn over the elbow. You know, we've seen Curtis Blades do that. We've seen, you know, Ioane and Jacek. We've seen a lot of people, you know, use that wrist grab and turn it into an elbow on their own offense. So that's something that Almeida certainly could have, you know, benefited from. If you see in that thumbnail that we have put up right now, Lewis was grabbing the left wrist of Almeida. Almeida could have easily just, you know, gave him that wrist and turned the elbow on and, you know, maybe cut him or, you know, did some kind of damage, for God's sakes. But instead, what we got was them lovingly and longingly looking into each other's eyes for about 25 minutes. And, you know, it is what it is. It sucks that it was a snoozer at the top of the main event. But the rest of the card was pretty decent, man. Well, you know,
man, I'm glad you mentioned those elbows, too, because I was just writing that down. And that, all jokes aside, I understand. Right. I understand what the game plan is. I have been in the gym with people who are like, I'm just trying to hold you down. But, you know, just like Michael Bisping said, like, so you want to be a UFC fighter. And those elbows were there. You know, if you're controlling them that much, yeah, you don't want to get them up, but you can cause damage over. If you had, like they said, that was a ridiculous amount of control time. You can hit those liver. You can hit the body. You can, you know, put that knee. And it's like, it seems like over 20 minutes, if he would have been a little bit more active, I think he would have worn Derek Lewis out. But again, I understand, you know, I'm not there trying to hold Derek Lewis down and, you know, not getting knocked in the face by him. So that's me speaking, you know, that's me armchairing it. You know what I mean? But
yeah.
I was just, Almeida does need to add a little bit more to that, because if he's going to fight here at that heavyweight, he's going to need to learn to put damage on these guys.
Yeah, I mean, I'll tell you what, if he'd fought Curtis Blades this event like how he was supposed to, and all he knew how to do was wrestle like how he showed, I think he would have certainly lost that fight. I was already going to pick Blades against Almeida when they were scheduled to fight, but now I'm even more confident in him against Almeida, because it seemed like that was the only, you know, that's his only game plan. He's very one-dimensional, Almeida, and we knew that going into this fight. We thought that one dimension would be enough to finish Lewis, or, you know, at least, you know, put the beat down on him. Unfortunately, I mean, it was enough to win the fight for sure. You know, there's no argument that he lost, but it was just not the entertaining fight that we've known Almeida for, and certainly not the entertaining fight that we've known Lewis for. And
it's not the it's not the win that he needed, you know.
Yeah,
that reflects,
this doesn't put you forward.
Yeah, it does not. It kind of keeps you in place, if anything. So actually, I was surprised at this pick going on to what my shock of the night was.
Big upset.
Big upset, man. Good call. I had it early. I was like, oh, man, the Bonfim brothers are going to get it done. You know, both of them. And then just Dalby turned it on. Good call.
Yeah.
Got that dog in him. Woo-woo.
Yeah, for sure. Dalby got that dog in him. I mean, we talked about it on the preview pod that, you know, Bonfim is a tough SOB, but he's never fought somebody that has the dog in him like Dalby does. And, you know, Dalby never being finished, or at least, you know, not being finished in a fight where the other guy doesn't pop for anything. You know, we've seen him get tested and come out second and third round and whoop ass. And Saturday was no different, man. He withstood that early storm from Bonfim, and about halfway into the second round, you could see all the will just leave Bonfim's body, and Dalby just put it on him. And this is a guy that doesn't have a lot of finishes in the UFC, Nicholas Dalby. So I was really happy to see him, you know, put that pace on him. You could see, like, that was the game plan, right? As soon as he came out in the beginning of the fight, he immediately pressured Bonfim to the fence and, you know, just had that kind of rugged and torrid pace and wore him down, man. And it was a very well-executed game plan, and it ended up materializing that second-round finish for Dalby. Huge upset. If you guys followed the pick on the pod, I believe it was plus 450 or something like that for Dalby to win. So, you know, a lot of money to be made there. Dalby's one of those dudes you can't count out, man. And even though Gabriel Bonfim is a very talented fighter, even though he's a very decorated finisher and he's a great grappler, he's a great striker, he just hasn't fought anybody who is not going to go away like Nicholas Dalby, you know? So I'm really proud of the dude. Happy to see him get that finish. And now he's looking at like three or four fight win streak in the UFC. Pretty solid, man. You know? Yeah. Four fight win streak.
How very
pretty
Dutch
solid
of him to just compliment the crowd too, you know? It was very,
yeah.
Dude, class act, man. I like him. I'm a fan of
100%.
Him.
100%. Yeah, big, huge class act, Nicholas Dalby. He's been in the game for a long time. So I'm excited to see where he goes from here. But as far as Bonfim goes, you know, take some time off. fight another can, like how they do, and you know, work your way back up. I think for sure he needs to work on his cardio. I think it was a bit of an adrenaline dump performing in front of the crowd that was, you know, very much a pro Bonfim crowd in Brazil. Maybe there's something to that he can try to work on, you know, maybe get people in the gym to cheer and yell and scream and stuff, and try to work on shutting out the noise. But number one thing he has to work on for sure is his cardio and his pace management, because Dalby put that pace on him and he looked lost out there after the first round, you know. Great performance by Dalby, man. I wouldn't expect anything less from him. The guy's a fucking dog. So it was awesome. It was a great finish, great upset. I was hype as hell. I was screaming, watching the TV, going crazy. Yeah, man, that was awesome. I don't know what else to say. I was very proud of Dalby in that performance. Couple other fights on this card. Rodrigo Nascimento put a beating down on Dontel Mays. It looked like he was going to get the finish at a couple points. In that first round, he had him hurt pretty bad. I think he landed like a flying knee at one point, or maybe it was just a big knee in the clinch. But, you know, he was all over Dontel Mays. I was very surprised that he couldn't get the finish. Like, as you know, this is the second time they fought. And the first fight, Nascimento was able to get that rear naked choke on Dontel Mays. We have the picture for you on the screen right now. In this fight, he really couldn't get him down to those kind of positions, but he was whooping his ass on the feet. And Dontel Mays, if he has nothing else, he's tough, you know. Guy's got a good chin. And Nascimento was not able to get him out of there, even though he had him on Queer Street a couple of times. You know, the fight started off really exciting, and I thought for sure Nascimento was going to get him out. But it kind of just fizzled out into a sloppy heavyweight fight. And, you know, that's what we get, you know. And sometimes that's what we love, you know what I'm saying? I hate myself as much as the next guy. Sometimes I like to see some fat heavyweights throw down for three rounds, you know?
I mean, it's better than seeing two fat, like one fat and one skinny one lying around for 25 minutes.
Yeah, that's for sure. But yeah, you know, good performance from Nascimento nonetheless. I would have loved to see him get the finish, but it is what it is. He dominated and, you know, proved that he's the better fighter for sure. I think he's got a very high ceiling there. And then we had Abus Magomedov versus Caio Baraglio, and another fight that it looked like Baraglio could have got the finish, but he's content to just, you know, win the fight, and I don't blame him, honestly. Baraglio is obviously he's a very smart fighter. He's a very cerebral fighter. If you see any interviews with him, he's very much a student of the game, and, you know, he knows what he's doing. He knows what he's talking about, and makes sense to me that he wouldn't press for a finish instead of, you know, just playing safe and getting those two checks, you know what I mean? Getting that win bonus instead. But regardless, he was obviously a step ahead of Abus the whole fight. First round was pretty close. Abus had a good first round, as he usually does. He throws a lot of kicks, stays on the outside, you know, it's kind of tricky in there. And then second round, he starts to wear down a bit. Baraglio starts to land. Third round, it was the Caio Baraglio show. He landed that beautiful flying knee. It looked like he had him out of there, but Abus stayed tough, and Baraglio just kind of you know, stayed smart and kept landing points until the end of the fight. You know, I would have loved to see the grappling play out a bit more. The few grappling exchanges that they had, Baraglio seemed to be the much stronger fighter there. He almost got a choke at one point. Again, it looked like he could have finished the fight a couple of moments, but Abus stayed tough, and Baraglio is content to win a decision. So he was happy to just, you know, win the fight comfortably and, you know, get those two checks at the end. So great fight from Baraglio. Smart fight.
One thing I'd mention, I don't think I've ever seen so much positive talking in a UFC card than I did here. I felt like almost in every single card, like, they were, like, having full-on conversations, giving each other hugs all the way in between rounds, like, it was
You mean between the fighters?
Yeah, it was like the friendliest fight card I think I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of mutual respect in this matchup in particular. In the Rodrigo fight, same deal, because, you know, they fought before. And then the Almeida Lewis fight, they're obviously in love with each other and they don't know it. So it was very easy to see the mutual respect there, considering that they, you know, spent the whole fight staring into each other's eyes.
One that had just no short of violence.
Oh, yeah, no, Elvis Brenner got that knockout. That was about as clean a hook as you can get. Even though it didn't land in a clean spot, it kind of just like hit him right behind the ear. He turned off the he turned the off button on, or I guess, or hit the off button, I should say, and took out, I'm not even going to try to pronounce this guy's name, Kruszczuski, in the first round. And the fight was shaping out to be pretty good, but these shooto box guys, man, let me tell you, they're dogs in there. And if they land a good shot, they're very happy to take one to land one. And if they land theirs, there's a good chance that you're going to go down from it. You know?
It was a sick spot, too. It was just like, I like watching the replay, it was like, man, there's not much that he could have done. You know,
yeah,
it really wasn't. And, as like you just he did hit the read, but as it was dirty.
Yeah, I mean, you can see in the replay that homeboy was even turning away from the punch. Like he got hit with the absolute last part of that punch, and it was enough in the right spot, just, you know, right behind the ear, kind of in the temple area, and just flatlined him, man. It was quite the knockout from Elvis Brenner. And you know, I'm excited to see where he goes from here. The dude's he's had some good fights in the UFC. That's a huge highlight for him.
Yeah.
And
just like we were saying, you know, oftentimes it's not just if you win, it's how you win, and that's the type of stuff that, you know, gets you, you know, maybe that top 15 that you're calling for. You're not going to get top 15, you know, lying around, but hitting that, Dana White will give you that one. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, we'll see. You know, this was at a catchweight fight, so. I'm sure his next fight is going to be at his home at lightweight, but yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot of people in that weight class for him to fight next. You know, you can give him one of these unranked dudes like Ricky Glenn or, you know, Drew Dober, one of these guys, and I think any of those fights are going to be fireworks. You know, I'd like to see him against that guy, Rafael Alves. I think that'd be an awesome fight. Yeah, there's a lot of ways you could take Elvis Brenner after that one.
Bro, speaking of fireworks, and I would love to see this one again. I know how I feel about draws, but I get it. But I would like, if they would have said gear him up for one more round, I would have been so happy. I'd love to see this in a five rounder.
Yeah, I mean,
holy shit, dude.
Fakhretdinov and Zaleski Dos Santos.
Hey, watch
put
your
on
language,
the...
brother.
This is a family show. Renat Fakhretdinov and Eliza Zaleski Dos Santos put on a fucking banger. Honestly, I thought that should have been fight of the night. I thought Dalby should have got performance of the night, and that fight should have got fight of the night. First round comes out, Fakhretdinov puts it on him. He had him really hurt,
dude,
in that
I
first
swear,
round.
Dude, I swear, I missed every big moment of this fight, too. I went to go get, like, ice or something, and my girl starts screaming. I'm like, what happened? I'm like, he just walked over and punched him in the face. And I was like, it can't be that simple. And they showed the replay, and he literally just walked over and just punched him right in the face.
Punched him square in the face.
Right,
yeah,
in the
man.
Fucking face.
Yeah, it was a dogfight, man. And, you know, second round comes out. Fakhretdinov had slowed down a little bit, but still did enough to win that round handedly. And then third round, Jesus Christ, ZDS just had that dog in him and put the beat down on Fakhretdinov. I thought he could have got the finish at a couple points, but Fakhretdinov is so tough. But certainly a 10-8 round there. I was very, you know, the draw made a lot of sense for me, seeing how the fight played out. Fakhretdinov won the first two rounds, and Dos Santos very clearly won the third round, 10-8. So the draw was a perfect call for me. I don't know if you make a rematch. I'm not sure if it makes sense. I think both guys should just, you know, keep chugging along. But certainly not the huge performance from Fakhretdinov that we thought we would get. He was like a minus 400 favorite in this fight. And Zaleski Dos Santos showed him that, you know, he still has that fighting spirit. You know, he's still a dog in there.
He's
so
brewed with Modelo.
I'll tell you that much, you know. but yeah, man, that was an awesome fight. Definitely one to rewatch. I think if you're going to go back and rewatch any fights from this card, that fight and the Dalby fight are the ones that are most worth it. Couple other fights on this card, though. Vitor Petrino got that knockout over Modestus Bukauskas. Modestus, I thought he was on the up and up. You know, he came back to the UFC and was doing pretty well. He got a little lazy in this fight. You know, he threw out that jab and kind of just watched it. Didn't really use anything after it, and left his right hand down when he threw it. And Petrino picked up the read, and next time he threw that lazy jab, he landed that clean left hook, Alex Poton Pereira style, and turned the lights out, man. Didn't need a follow-up shot or anything. Very solid punch from Petrino. Petrino is one of those well-rounded guys too at this weight class at light heavyweight that I'm very excited to see where he goes from here. Yeah, that's exactly the punch I'm talking about. That he kind of threw it out there and left that chin on a platter for him, you know. Dangerous shot, but you know, he paid the price, obviously. But yeah, Petrino's got a bright future at light heavyweight, man. I'm excited to see where he goes. The guy can wrestle, he can grapple. He obviously has the power in his hands, like he saw. And a big proponent of that too is his timing, because he was able to time that left hook perfectly. And I think that's a tool that you can't take for granted, especially at the higher weight classes, where it only takes, you know, one solid punch or one well-timed takedown attempt to finish a fight. So great on Petrino. I'm excited to see where he goes from here. I think he's a very bright prospect at 205. And then Angela Hill got it done too. My girl, she won a very convincing fight against Denise Gomez. You know, Gomez hits really hard and, you know, landed a few good punches on Hill, but Hill's very tough, man. And, you know, she's taken some huge punches from the likes of Jessica Andrade, from Denise Gomez, from a lot of heavy hitters, you know, Mackenzie Dern. So I had no, you know, I didn't lose any faith in her chin. And she was able to work the clinch. She was able to get takedowns and just make it a scrap, and clearly won the fight. I thought it was an awesome performance from Hill to turn back the young contender in Gomez. They had her at underdog odds. I believe it was only like plus 120, but still a nice ticket to cash if you guys got in on it. That's pretty much all I want to talk about from this card. Eduardo Mora was huge. She came in overweight, 5 pounds overweight, and beat the shit out of Montserrat Canejo Ruiz like she should have. She looked like a flyweight fighting a strawweight. It was not fair, not cool. Don't like that. But you know, I'm sure the UFC is going to force her to move up in her next fight, and they gave Ruiz another contract coming off of that loss because it wasn't fair, man. The dude, she was fighting a woman that was way bigger than her, and she, you know, she showed some heart, but it wasn't enough. And then Mark Diakasi put on the boring wrestling performance that we've known him to become recently. Kind of crazy how the fight card started with a boring wrestling performance and then ended with a boring wrestling performance. We were kind of sandwiched there. But the meat in the middle was pretty solid, man. You know, that Hill fight was fun. The Dalby fight was amazing. The Baraglio fight was pretty interesting. And then the Fakhradinov fight was awesome too. And then you got a couple of nice knockouts in the middle there. You can't complain, you know. Pretty solid card there overall. That being said, we've got an awesome card coming up next weekend. We're going to take a little bit of a break and come back in the second segment and break down this UFC 295, y'all. Let's do it. Yeah, so welcome back. We're going to talk about UFC 295, Madison Square Garden. They stack the card like they usually do, and we're coming at you with two title fights for vacant titles or interim titles in the two biggest weight classes. We have light heavyweight capping the event, Yuri Prochazka versus Alex Pereira, and then the co-main event, you got Tom Aspinall versus Sergey Pavlovich. Both fights definitely have fireworks written all over them. I'm really excited to get into it. Jordan, let's get into this main event. Let's get right to it. Who you got here?
Oh man, dude. I like both of these dudes. I love both these dudes. These dudes embody you know, the fighting spirit sponsored by Modelo. Dude, I am a big fan of Pereira. He has made a believer in me. I don't know how you cannot be a believer in this man, having beaten, you know, what, three champions already, that either current or former ones. And, you know, not just beating, maybe Yan, you can argue, but the other two, like, just knocked out cold. So I'm leaning toward Pereira. I wouldn't mind seeing Prochazka get the win. Like I said, huge fan of him. I thought it was a very, you know, very champion-like move to vacate his title when he's hurt, whenever he could have just aimed for, oh, let's have an interim belt, and then when I come back, I'll defend it. You know, he was very... he was big enough to let that move on. So I love both these dudes. But if I'm going to put my money, I'm going to put on the power of Pereira. But I am interested to see how he's going to handle just the creativity that Prochazka is going to bring him. And it's awesome. I'm pumped. What do you think?
I'm honestly so excited for this matchup. I don't know who to pick. I think as I break down the fight, as we talk about it, it'll probably become a little bit more clear. But for me, it comes down to two things, right? Pereira obviously has the power. They both hit really hard, though. But Pereira seems to be a little bit tighter. His technique is obviously a lot more traditional. Excuse me. Prochazka, on the other hand, is a wild man in every sense of the word. He's going to throw things at Pereira that he probably hasn't ever seen. He's going to be there for the whole fight. He's tough as nails. So I do expect him to, if he gets hit from one of these big shots from Pereira, I expect him to stay in there. And then on the other hand, too, Prochazka has the way more well-rounded game in MMA. You know, it's really not easy to deny at this point, especially coming off the heels of a submission win over Glover Teixeira. They're going to get into some crazy striking exchanges. Pereira is going to be looking for that left hook. He's going to be looking for that low line, low kick, that calf kick. Prochazka, on the other hand, I think you're going to see a lot of front kicks up the middle from him. I think he's going to try to keep the distance. If they get into a tight space, I really like Prochazka's use of the elbows, use of the uppercuts. And it's not like Pereira's never been knocked out before. You know, we saw him get knocked out by Israel Adesanya. I think that was even earlier this year. Like, that wasn't that long ago. You know what I mean? Yeah, that was in April. You know, so he's been knocked out before. It's not like he's this unstoppable force. You know what I mean? Prochazka, on the other hand, has been knocked out years ago by King Mo, I believe it was. And then he had another knockout loss in the beginning part of his career. But the dude is a fucking dog for sure. He's on like a 20-fight win streak or something ridiculous like that. He hasn't lost in a long time. He knows how to win fights. He knows how to submit. He knows how to knock people out. He knows how to find his shots. But every fight that Prochazka's in turns out to be a war. And I don't think that's really the kind of style that bodes well against somebody as clean and technical and powerful as Alex Pereira. You know, I think we might be looking at like a Gaethje versus Alvarez type fight here, where the one guy is a wild man and hits really hard and has all these X factors, but he hasn't fought somebody who is going to be there the whole fight and hits, you know, maybe just as hard as he does. I think it's going to come down to the toughness of both athletes. I think we're going to see this fight go a little bit longer. I think a lot of people are calling for an early knockout from Pereira. I'm not sure what you've seen from Prochazka's game that you think that he's susceptible to an early knockout. But I do expect this fight to go a little bit longer. I don't think it's going to go to decision, but I think it's going to go to the third or fourth round before we see a finish. I think the longer that the fight goes, it favors Prochazka. Pereira has looked pretty exhausted before. Although he does fight a pretty conservative game plan to, you know, withstand the exhaustion. Prochazka does not fight conservative at all, and I expect him to push the pace. And I think this fight might look a little bit like the Dalby versus Bonfim fight that we saw. Maybe not that Pereira is going to come out so early and blow his load like Bonfim did, but I think Prochazka is going to be a dog in there. I think he's going to take some big shots and stay in the fight and end up getting a finish in the third, fourth, or fifth round. You know, I think Prochazka is going to get it done, man. I don't know. I just have that feeling. And I was picking Pereira a lot in the lead up to this fight, but the closer that we get to the fight, the more that I think about what kind of fighter that Prochazka is, and the fact that he can land in weird spots that Pereira might not see coming, and the fact that Pereira is human. You know, he's been knocked out before. He got knocked out in Glory. He got knocked out in the UFC. He can get taken down too. Prochazka seems to have more tools in this fight. If Prochazka does want to go for a wrestling type game plan, he obviously was able to wrestle with Glover Teixeira, so I expect him to have some success there against Pereira. But he can't rely on that. You know, he has to do what got him to the dance. Throw those weird strikes, throw those overhands, throw those elbows, throw those uppercuts. I think I'm getting sick. I feel it in my voice. But yeah, I don't know, man. It's a tough fight for me to pick. I'm probably going to end up just going on the over, whatever the over is. If it's over 1.5, I think that's a great, great odds there. But I think I'm going to go with Pereira, or not Pereira. I think I'm going to go with Prochazka, all things said and done.
Yeah, it's one where I don't feel confident in either one that I'm picking, to be honest. It's going to be a damn good fight, though, I swear. I could see Pereira getting knocked out early. I could see Prochazka getting an angle or creating some kind of, you know, just like we were talking about on the first segment, you know, sometimes you get hit with this weird punch in place and it puts your lights out, you know. I'm going to go with Pereira. He's proven that he can get in there. He can hang with champions. He can beat champions. I wouldn't be surprised to see him just put the pace on him, maybe really start to fluster Prochazka and you know, overwhelm him with that stoic type of in-your-face style that he has.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I'm like waffling back and forth. I can see Pereira landing a clean left hook on the inside of Yuri's guard because Yuri does leave his hands down, you know? And if you get caught by a left hook from Alex Pereira, there's a good chance you're going to go down. We did see Blachowicz tank some of those shots in their fight together. So maybe that power doesn't translate up to 205 as well as it did at 185. But, you know, Prochazka's there to be hit. Pereira's there to be hit. I see this fight ending in a knockout on either side, honestly. If not a knockout, a club and sub from Prochazka. But I'm really excited to see how it shakes out. I'm honestly not too keen on who to pick. The rest of the card, I have some very confident picks. But the main event and co-main event are honestly toss-ups for me. And let's get into that co-main event because it's a fucking banger, dude. I'm really excited for this matchup. So we got Tom Aspinall versus Sergey Pavlovich. In what should have been the heavyweight title fight for a long time coming. Both these guys are finishers. Both of them have not seen the second round in like 5 years. Both of them have knockouts on their record, first round knockouts for, you know, by the handful. For Aspinall, he also has a lot of submissions on his record. So it really comes down to, if you're not familiar with these fighters, Sergey Pavlovich is currently on the longest first round knockout streak in UFC history. I believe it's 5 or 6 fights. He goes out there and he punches you in the face. And after his first punch lands, his second punch is right behind it. His third and fourth are right behind that one. And he just puts a barrage out on people's faces until they go down. It's been a long time since we've seen him face any adversity in the octagon. His debut against Alistair Overeem was last time he lost and the last time that he showed any sign of, you know, adversity or weakness in a fight. Overeem was able to withstand the early storm, believe it or not, and get the takedown and beat the shit out of Pavlovich from the ground. It looked like Pavlovich had no idea what he was doing on his back. Obviously, that fight was his UFC debut, so that was like 5 or 6 years ago. There's a great chance that he's improved a lot since then. He's a young man. They're both young. They're both like 32 or 31, I think. So the game plan from Pavlovich is the same that it always is. Come out, put the pace on the guy, pressure him to the fence, land huge punches. And if he lands those punches, there's a good chance that you're going to go down. You're going to get knocked out. Tom Aspinall, on the other hand, has more tools to win this fight. He has the grappling advantage. He has, you know, he's very light on his feet. He's very fast. I think that's his biggest attribute in this weight class is his speed. He's fast as fuck for a heavyweight. The guy he bounces around. He lands, you know, really zippy punches and lands takedown attempts. And when he gets to the ground, he has a very, very comprehensive jiu-jitsu game. He started off as a jiu-jitsu fighter. So this fight can really go either way. On Aspinall's side, what I think... All right, so let me just... cut to the chase. I think it's going to come down to the first exchange. I think if Pavlovich can land on Aspinall with his first couple punches, he's going to knock him out. Aspinall has been knocked out before earlier in his career. It's heavyweight. Everybody can get knocked out. He got caught by Curtis Blaydes early in their fight, even though it was only like 15 seconds their fight. Blaydes landed a really nice right hand there. And yes, Aspinall was worried about the takedown, so maybe that's what he was thinking when he got hit with the right hand. You know how it goes, you know, classic wrestler fake into the right hand. He's excuse me, he's not going to be worried about the takedown from Pavlovich at all. It's non-existent. But if he gets hit with that right hand early, or if he gets, you know, backed up to the fence, there's a great chance that Pavlovich is going to, you know, hurt him and take him out of there. The other way that it can go is that Aspinall stays light on his feet. He circles the outside. Pavlovich does not land that early right hand and instead gets either taken down, or Aspinall looks like Stipe in the first Ngannou fight and is just, you know, zipping under the punches, circling out, staying super light on his feet, landing jabs until Pavlovich gets tired. And then Aspinall either finishes him on the ground or knocks him out on the feet, because he has the ability to knock people out on the feet as well. I love Aspinall. He's probably my favorite heavyweight fighter right now. Both of these guys are probably my one and two at heavyweight. So I'm really excited for this fight. I'm really excited to see how it shakes out. But I do favor the well-rounded game of Aspinall. I tend to always pick the technician in these fights when you have a technician versus a brawler or a power puncher. Even though Aspinall certainly is a power puncher, he's definitely not a brawler. He's a smart fighter. And I always tend to side with the smart and more technical fighters, to my detriment a lot of the times. But, you know, I think this fight can end up going either way. I do not see it making it out of the second round. It's probably going to end in the first round, honestly, but I don't see it getting to the second, or making it out of the second round regardless. Who you got in this one, Jordan?
I have me losing my fucking mind. That's what I got. I'm not going to try and pick this one.
Yeah, I don't blame you for that, you know. I think it's a tough fight. Actually, I'm looking at Aspinall's record. He's actually never been knocked out. He got that TKO knee injury against Curtis Blaydes, and he got submitted early in his career, and then has a DQ loss from an elbow that he landed 12-6. So Aspinall's never been knocked out. He has gotten tagged, though. And, you know, Pavlovich, it doesn't fucking matter to him if you've never been knocked out, because he'll just go out there and try and knock you out regardless. But I am gonna go with Aspinall here. I think he's gonna get it done. I think he's either gonna take down Pavlovich early and beat him up there, or he's gonna stay on the outside. Pavlovich is gonna blow his wad early, and then Aspinall is gonna pick up a finish late in the first round or early in the second round.
I'll tell you what. I'm pretty sure this next fight, though, honestly.
Yeah, Mackenzie Dern versus Jessica Andrade. Who you got in this one?
I've lost all faith in Andrade, man.
Really?
I mean, and I don't say that like jokingly. Like, I say that as in, like, I just, if you give me, you put her in a fight against someone like Dern, I'm probably going to just fade her, honestly. At this point, like, tell me the last time that she's had a competitive fight.
I mean, she beat the shit out of Lauren Murphy, like, in January this year, you know.
Yeah,
that's, I mean, Lauren Murphy. Yeah,
yeah, that's what I'm saying. No disrespect to Lauren Murphy, but like, we're talking about fighting killers, man.
Yeah,
you know, it seems like she's in that middle of where she gets, you know, worked by people that are higher on the food chain, but then she works people that are, you know, below her. So it's like that middle type of gatekeeper-esque in a weak division where there's not much, you know, people trying to knock at that gate. It's a weird place for Andrade at this point.
So where do you think Mackenzie Dern fits in that slot? You think she's
in the top five, top 10. Like, if she were to get a title fight off of like one or two wins, like, I wouldn't bat an eye at it.
Yeah.
Andrade would need to, like, if she beat Mackenzie Dern, she would need to beat like another like two or three for me to like look at her and see her, and not even just see her as a serious contender, like, but believe that she's a contender. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, honestly, if they made this fight, you know, a couple years ago, I would have picked Andrade easily. You know, I think she has, in her prime, I think she has the tools to put the beat down on somebody like Mackenzie Dern, somebody who's known for not wanting to get into an ugly fight. Andrade loves those ugly fights. What changes my mind so much, why I'm picking Dern so, like, easily, is how she came out in her last fight against Angela Hill. She showed that she learned a lot from her majority decision loss/draw to Yan Xiaonan. She showed that she needed to be a lot more urgent on the feet. Obviously, her grappling is incredible. She has all the gold medals and all the world championships that you can get in a jiu-jitsu world. So, you know, there's no surprise there that that's going to be a huge tool for her in this fight. But I think the pressure from Dern to fight that kind of fight that she fought against Hill, where she stayed in her face, landed these huge punches, and just put the beat down on her, I think that's going to serve her very well against Jessica Andrade. Andrade's game plan obviously is to get inside, land those big hooks, maybe go for a takedown of her own. But once you take down Mackenzie Dern, what are you going to do? Now you're on top of Mackenzie Dern, you know, jiu-jitsu world champion. So don't expect Andrade to go for much of a grappling game plan. I expect her to try to knock her out on the feet. Dern has shown some real toughness in her UFC career. She's taken some huge shots. Granted, she hasn't fought somebody that hits as hard as Jessica Andrade does. But I think if she does get to that inside position, Dern is going to be looking for the takedown. And while they're on the outside, Dern's going to be looking for big shots on the feet, landing overhand rights, landing leg kicks, and just generally making it a tough time for Andrade. I'm not saying that this is going to be an easy fight. I think no fight with Jessica Andrade is easy unless you have a marked advantage in the wrestling. Dern has great jiu-jitsu. She does not have great wrestling. So if she gets into a clinch position, I expect her to trip Andrade, take her down, and work her there. She's very strong in top position, obviously. If they stay on the feet and they stay on the outside or in the mid-range, I expect Dern to do a lot of good work here. And I'm going to take her, probably by decision. I think she gets it done. I don't think she'll be able to. She might be able to snap up a submission on Andrade if Andrade puts herself in those positions. But I can see Dern just, you know, staying patient and just whooping on Andrade's ass until the bell. That's what I think is going to happen.
I think she's going to finish her, to be honest.
Yeah? You think submission or knockout?
Probably submission. If I had to guess, I would imagine a submission. Although the way that she fought against Angela Hill, she beat the fuck out of her. So I mean, if that's the one that shows up, gets in the submission, I just think Andrade's gonna get finished again.
Yeah.
What is her record in the last like five fights?
Well, she got finished in her last three fights against Tatiana Suarez, Aaron Blanchfield, and Yan Xiaonan.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I don't want to see like her become the, you know, keep on going back to it, but like the Tony Ferguson of, you know, the women's division, where it's like, man, we used to love her. She used to be just this animal, but then before too long, so much of the mystique or the aura is stripped away.
Yeah.
Like it happens, man.
Yeah, I mean,
you know, we talk about it a lot.
If she loses this fight, I hope the UFC doesn't cut her. I know she'll be on a 4-fight loss, but you know, if they give her somebody like, I don't know, any one of these other women at unranked 115, she's going to beat the shit out of them. So
that's the problem though. Do you really want to watch her beat up Lauren Murphy's and all this, or
I love Andrade. I like seeing her beat these girls up. If she fights somebody like Tabitha Ricci or, you know, Tracy Cortez, she's going to like change their careers. They're going to keep them away. You're going to keep her away from those kind of women, but they keep giving her these tough fights, man. And, you know, Mackenzie Dern is no slouch in any form of MMA. So I think it's a really tough fight for Andrade. Certainly not unwinnable. I think, you know, there's a world that Mackenzie looks gun shy after Andrade lands a huge punch on her and is forced to go for a takedown game. And Andrade is very squat. It's hard to get her off her feet unless you're a very talented wrestler. I mean, there's a world that Andrade wins this fight, you know? There's a world that Andrade puts a beat down on Mackenzie on the feet and lands huge power punches and makes Mackenzie second guess everything, and she wins that fight. But I think it's more likely that Dern is rolling up this, rolling up the hill, so to speak, and she keeps adding those tools to her game. And, you know, seeing how different she looked in the Angela Hill fight versus the Yan Xiaonan fight, I expect her to add some more wrinkles to her game now, working with Jason Perillo and stuff. And I expect her boxing to look a lot better. And I think she's going to get it done here, man. I hate to see it, but I think she's going to get it done. A couple other really good fights on this card, though. You got Matt Frivola versus Benoit St. Denis. This is a banger matchup. If the main event and co-main event weren't put together, I would definitely pick this for fight of the night. Benoit Saint-Denis, super tough Frenchman, wrestler, has good power on the feet, southpaw fighter, likes to throw that body kick, likes to throw that left overhand. The left straight down the pipe is another big tool for him. His wrestling is really what brought him here. And something that can't be discounted is his toughness and his durability. The dude is tough as nails. He went 3 rounds with Zaleski Dos Santos after getting dog walked for the first two. They should have stopped that fight, honestly, but they didn't. And Benoit Saint-Denis showed his heart and his toughness in that matchup. And since then, hasn't lost. He's been in his natural weight class of 155. He took that fight on short notice to debut at the weight class above. He's fighting Matt Favola, steamroller Favola, who is also on a nice finish streak of his own. Coming off of that knockout win over Drew Dober, I believe it was his last fight. I think he's also finished Otman Zaitar and another guy that I don't know. But three fight first round knockout streak for Favola. Dude hits hard as fuck. He's also got a great guillotine in his back pocket. Solid wrestling game, but really his submissions are where he butters his bread on the ground. Trains out of Longo Weidman MMA out in Long Island. So, you know, they've got a couple fighters on this card that are going to war together. And that's always a nice, you know, morale booster. But I feel like St. Denis has too many tools to win this fight. I think he's going to be a lot tougher than Favola. We've seen Favola get finished before. We've seen him get chinned before. If St. Denis can, you know, pressure him, land some big punches or take him down, I definitely can see him getting a finish here, either by submission or by knockout. He has the pace, he has the toughness, he has the cardio. Favola, on the other hand, if he can somehow crack that chin of Benoit St. Denis, he can definitely win this fight. But I do think it's going to have to be one of those exciting, you know, flash knockouts or a club and sub kind of thing. I don't see his style working against Benoit St. Denis over three rounds. I think the longer the fight goes, the more it favors St. Denis. So I'm going to go with Benoit St. Denis here. I love both these guys, and I want to see them in this division for a long time. But I think St. Denis just has a bit more in his toolbox at this moment, and I expect him to get it done against Favola. And then my boy is back, Diego Lopez, coming back with the emo haircut, looking like John and Kate plus eight. I think he gets it done here, man. I don't know about you. Who you got in this fight?
You betting against Sabatini again?
Yeah, bro. I mean, listen, Sabatini's a great grappler, you know? But the guy is chinny. And it's not like Lopez doesn't know how to grapple. He's a black belt, and he's Alexa Grasso's jiu-jitsu coach, you know? Sabatini, on the other hand, if you catch him cold early, you can get him out of there, man. He got knocked out by Damon Jackson. He got finished before. He's been hurt in a couple of these fights. Against Jamal Emmers, he got hurt. Against TJ LaRamie, he got hurt. Tucker Lutz had some success against him. Sabatini's got that dominant wrestling game. He's got that great submission game. But Lopez, he hits like a motherfucker. And, you know, he's going to be smart in those positions. I don't think he's going to get caught with something like Emmers did. I don't think he's going to get, put in those bad positions that Ivlov was able to put him in, because Sabatini's not, in my opinion, I don't think he's as strong a wrestler as Ivlov. I think he's got a better jiu-jitsu game for sure. He can finish the fight with more submissions. But Lopez was able to withstand a lot of tough positions against Ivlov, and I expect him to come out, and the striking is going to be the big difference for me. I think his striking is way better than Sabatini's, and I think he's going to hurt him. I think he's going to get him out of there. I like Lopez here at underdog odds. Who you got?
Dude, I'm riding with Pat Sabatini. I feel like I have to look back on some of my episodes, but I feel like every time I pick against him, it fucks me over. So I think I'm going to ride with Sabatini on this one.
Yeah, I mean, it's a pick'em fight, so it's not crazy to pick either side. But I just feel like the striking on Lopez's side is too much, and I think he's going to chin Sabatini early. If not, finish him with a strike, take him, or, you know, catch him in a submission after hurting him on the feet. But yeah, that being said, there's a couple other really good fights on this card. I'm not really too sure about this one at flyweight. I've seen Stu Verseg before. Alessandro Costa is pretty solid too, but I really want to get into this women's strawweight fight, Lupi Godinez versus Tabitha Ricci. Lupi has been kind of ups and downs in the UFC so far, but the ups are so high, it's like hard for me to not have faith in her. She's got a great wrestling game. She's got some very slick boxing as well. And I think that the boxing is going to be the big difference here against Tabitha Ricci. Tabitha Ricci is a very much so lay and pray type grappler, where she likes to go for the takedowns, doesn't necessarily know how much to or much how to finish those fights, but she will get the takedown, and she will, you know, put the beat down on Ricci, or on her opponents rather. But I think Lupi's wrestling is going to cancel out Ricci's, and I think they're going to look at a stand-up fight where Lupi just has way more tools on the feet, and you're going to see some desperation shots from Ricci get stuffed, and Lupi might even get in some wrestling positions herself. But I think on the feet, she's gonna really put it to Ricci, and I expect her to win a decision victory very comfortably here. Couple other fights I want to talk about. Nazim Sadikov versus Vyacheslav Borshev. I'm really excited for this matchup. As soon as they made it, I was very confident in picking Nazim, and my pick still stands. Vyacheslav Borshev, very talented kickboxer, hits really hard for his frame. Like, he doesn't look like he hits hard, but he hits really hard. And he has great technique on the feet. He knows how to time those hooks. He knows how to time his jab and his straight. His kicks are pretty solid too. His knees are nice. But the problem with Vyacheslav Borshev is his wrestling defense, man. I think, you know, he's 2-2 in the UFC, 2 knockouts, 2 losses by decision, I believe. And in those 2 losses, he got taken down like 20 times. So if you just look at the guy's hips, he's going to fall over. And Nazim Sadikov also has that kickboxing background, but he is a lot more well-rounded in the MMA world. He likes to use his wrestling. He likes to use his pace, his pressure, his takedowns to get to advantage positions and get submissions. He has a victory over Terrence McKinney in his last fight. He had that fight with Evan Elder, which got stopped from a cut. He was losing that fight until he got that cut. But, you know, Sadikov has that wrestling style, and I think it's going to give Vyacheslav Borshev a lot of problems on the mat, you know. I expect Sadikov to take him down over and over and eventually get a submission in the second or third round. That's just how I see the fight playing out. I do think that Borshev can get it done. I think he can knock him out. I think he can knock out anybody. But I just think the wrestling is too strong for Sadikov for him to lose this fight. So that's a pick that I'm very confident in, is Nazim Sadikov. Another pick I'm super confident in, probably my most confident pick on the card, would be Jared Gordon versus Mark Madsen. Mark Madsen, Danish silver medalist in wrestling, also 40 years old, I believe, maybe 41 now, 39, okay. He's fighting Jared Gordon, who has very nice boxing, clean boxing fundamentals, solid grappler, but his best tool is his cardio and his pace. And those are things that Mark Madsen does not have. Mark Madsen will get tired every fight. He's not necessarily even really a finisher. So, you know, he typically will win the first 2 rounds and then lose the 3rd round. And I don't know if he's going to be able to win much here against Gordon. Gordon's a very strong anti-wrestler. He's good at, you know, staying in top or staying in good positions on the ground if it does go there. He's a black belt. So I expect him to, you know, be able to negate the wrestling of Mark Madsen. And I think his striking is a lot cleaner. And as the fight goes on, he's going to wear down Madsen immensely. I expect Madsen to have a great first round and then Gordon to pick up the 2nd and 3rd round and win a decision very easily. Maybe even get a finish in the 3rd round, but I think it's more likely that he wins a lopsided decision here. Maybe not lopsided, but a clear-cut decision. So I'm very confident in Jared Gordon there. And then on the first fight of the night, Dennis Bazuka versus Jamal Emmers. I'm going to go with Emmers here by decision. Dennis is another fighter out of Longo Weidman MMA, like Sadikov, like Frivola. And he's another guy that really loves that that knockout game that Frivola likes to play. But I don't know if he has the tools to deal with the length of Jamal Emmers, to deal with the wrestling of Jamal Emmers, and, you know, just that outside striking style that Emmers brings in every fight. I think it's going to give Bazuka a lot of trouble, and I expect Jamal Emmers to build as the fight goes on and Bazuka to be looking for one big knockout punch that's never going to materialize. So I got Emmers by decision there. I'm ready to go into the betting slip portion if you are, Jordan.
Yeah, man, let's go.
You want to break down your picks?
I'm going to take Pereira, taking the lightweight strap. I'm going to go inside with Aspinall as well, getting it done by finish. I think Dern is going to finish Andrade. Going and riding with my boy Pat Sabatini. I think there's one more on this card that I got. Go ahead with yours.
All right. I'm gonna go with. Oh man. Honestly, I'm not gonna pick anybody for the main event. It's too close for me. In the co-main event, I'm gonna
coward.
Yeah. If you put a gun to my head, I'll take Prochazka. But co-main event, I'm going to go with Aspinall. I'm going to go with Mackenzie Dern money line. I don't know how she gets it done, but I think she gets it done. I'm going to go Benoit Saint-Denis. I'm going to go Diego Lopez. I'm going to go Lupi Godinez by decision. I'm going to go Nazim by money line and Jared Gordon money line. Jared Gordon by decision is probably going to be a good prop too. But yeah, I'm really confident in those picks. The ones that I'm most confident, and I'm going to take Emmers by decision. If you're gonna ask me what I'm most confident in, I'd say Emmers by decision, Jared Gordon money line, Lupi Godinez money line. Those are the fights that I'm very confident in. And then I would go Nazim Sadikov, and then I'd go Aspinall and Dern, and then I'd go Prochazka. Prochazka is the one I'm least confident in. But we'll see how it shakes out, man. I'm really excited for this fight card. There's a lot of good fights on here and two huge title fights to top off the card. So, yeah, man, we're kind of spoiled here. And I'm excited to see that because it hasn't been good for us UFC fans these last few weeks. And next week's not going to be any better. But this week is solid. So let's take it where we can, get the wins in where we can. And I'm really excited to see how things shake out here, man. Let's make this money this weekend. Let's do it. All right. Thank you so much for listening, y'all. Appreciate you sticking through with us. Follow us on YouTube. Follow us on Instagram. We got TKO MMA Podcast on Instagram now. We're posting shorts. We're posting reels. We're doing what we can. Staying engaged. And thanks for all the love, y'all. Let's get this bread this weekend. Take it easy.